And you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Sister G, and I'd like to welcome you to the Global Roots Radio Show. Today we're going to talk about Indonesia and Indonesian culture and music, so please stay tuned. Again, hello everyone. This is Global Roots Radio, and we are going to talk about the country called Indonesia. And here to tell us about Indonesia is, for one, James Wilson and his wife Marty. And Marty is from Indonesia. Yes. So first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
And I'll let you introduce the guests, you know, later on, whenever it feels comfortable. Marty, you're from Indonesia. Tell Americans, where is Indonesia in this world, if you can?
Okay, yes. My name is Marty Wilson. I've been here since 1986 as a student before I met my husband. And Indonesia is actually the fourth largest country in the world. And
population.
And it's the largest archipelago in the world, too. And it has over 18,000 islands. So it's located, actually, it's not located attached to the continent of Asia. It's located between the big continent of Asia and Australia. So there are, if you see the map, there are a lot of little islands scattered between Asia and Australia. That's Indonesia.
Okay.
So, and we have 18,000 islands, and the biggest island is Sumatra, where I think most people heard about the tsunami in 2006, probably. And then, yeah, and then a lot of earthquake. And then it's part of the Ring of Fire, so a lot of volcanoes everywhere on the island of Sumatra, Java, and Bali. I think people know Indonesia less than Bali. Bali is, when I tell people I'm from Indonesia, and then they said, people usually ask, so is it part of Bali? And actually, Bali is just a tiny island in Indonesia.
So what are the countries surrounding Indonesia?
Just
people, and what oceans is it surrounded by?
Yeah, between two oceans, Indian Ocean and Pacific Oceans, and also on the north.
Yeah, no, the South China Sea. The countries that are north are the southern Asian countries like Malaysia, Cambodia. The Philippine Islands are just northeast of Indonesia. And Malaysia actually shares one big island, Borneo, with Indonesia. Half of it is Malaysian and half of it is Indonesian. And there's also another island that's shared is the Papua New Guinea. There's one side called Papua that's Indonesian and the other side is Papua.
Province of Papua. And then East Timor, yeah, we just... Indonesia just let go. It's Timor, and then it's its own country.
Mm-hmm. So there was quite a long struggle with East Timor trying to get independence.
Yeah. And then the people of Papua still trying to be independent too.
Okay.
It's hard because there's so many different cultures.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like a melting pot like America, except it's one country. You know, so that they do have one language, Indonesian, that they decided would bring everyone together. So all the schools teach Indonesian, but usually at home, every family has another language of that area that they speak. So one of our guests, Jonathan, is a graduate of UMKC grad school, the Block School. Did you have a different language when you were a kid instead of Indonesian? Did you speak like Batak or...
I did not speak, but my parents sometimes they speak in our tribe language, because if they want to say something like secret and they don't want me to understand what they say, so sometimes they use that kind of language. But for me, I don't really like understand what.
So they didn't teach you growing up?
I mean, yeah, because like Indonesian is like the national language, and mostly
TV and radio.
Radios and everything's in Indonesia. And then, also, my parents, they don't really speak in my tribal language, so they don't have the capability to teach me, too. So, it's just, like a really limited language. Mm-hmm. They use it, yeah.
And Sam here also speak different. So, when I was little, I was... I speak a different language, too.
Javanese. Javanese. There's one island called Java. and a lot of the
coffee comes from?
Yes. And then, you know, in 18,000 islands, there are 365 ethnic groups and tribal groups, and then 583 dialects.
So my question is, there's so much diversity. What is the commonality? What binds all these cultures together? Is it just political? Is it?
We are peaceful people.
But it is a variety, and it is hard sometimes to keep them under. I mean, to keep everyone happy. I mean, that's what a central government is supposed to do. They try to, you know, they do try and spread the money around, you know, the to keep everyone satisfied. But they all have oceans. They all have similar, you know, they like there's a lot of coastline, 18,000 islands, a lot of people on the beach fishing or having jobs related to agriculture. They all, almost all of them like rice. There's a lot of rice in Indonesia.
Because it's grown there.
It's grown there, it's easy, and it's and there's not a lot of, I mean, more recently there's good transportation, but before it was all done by boat, you know, and so having, that's another thing, I guess, that, you know, a lot of them are very familiar with the oceans and all the little islands that are just outside of the big islands, and that's the big thing that brings them together, I think.
Yeah, in United States, we are talking about, you know, promoting diversity and stuff. In Indonesia, it's very common because everybody is different. And then by looking at the facial face, we can tell where he is from, kind of, you know, like...
He's from Batas,
north of Sumatra. And then Sam is from... different side of Java, in the island of Java, there are three languages spoken, and then he speaks different languages too besides Indonesian and English.
So I do have, I guess, one question that just comes to me is, how are these indigenous languages kept alive? Now, you say you really didn't learn it, and...
Actually, Indonesia is a national language, and Bahasa Indonesia is a national language, and... Like, the biggest tribe in Indonesia is Javanese. I know, like, I can speak in Javanese better than speaking my own tribe language, tribal language, because all my friends, they're Javanese, and they still speak in Javanese right now. So I learned when I was in college, I learned how to speak Javanese, but because I don't have a lot of friends, they come from my tribe, so I didn't speak my tribe language.
Yeah, it's also required by the government when the children are in elementary school and middle school, they are required to take a native language in part of the, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So wherever you live, then that's great.
Yes.
Except that if you're a Batak and you're not in the Batak area, you're not going to learn your native language. You're going to learn the native area. Okay. It depends on where you live, that native area language. So it's okay, because then you got to speak the language of his friends, but... You're right, that in some of the smaller tribes, or if you move away from your tribe to another city, it's hard to keep things alive unless your parents teach. And it's just like in America. It's like with Marty and I. We tried to teach the kids Indonesian here in the United States. We have three kids, and they know basic words. But it's really hard if you're in a community where the TV, the school, all your friends are speaking English. And I try, but I'm not fluent. And Marty tried sometimes, but... It's just hard when they answer you back in English all the time.
Right. But other languages, and then we're going to move on, but just out of curiosity, are the languages distinct? I mean, are they very much different, or do they share a lot? Do they have a lot in common?
Very different. They are very different.
Uh-huh.
And then, like Sundanese and Javanese, we might use the same word, but in different level of... Just like Japanese, the language is spoken in three levels, like where you are in the social life, or whether you are older or younger. So there are three levels.
Like a formal or an informal, or the really high level, you know, that you'd never speak to your friends, but you better speak to your grandparent that way.
And those three levels are completely different.
You mean they're completely different in the different languages?
In one language, like, for example, Javanese. Yes.
Uh-huh. There's three different levels that I don't even attempt to try and speak to an older person in Javanese, because it's very complicated and hard to know. And it's hard for me to know when to speak the right words in that language. So another good reason that the Indonesian has this one basic language. And Indonesian itself is a very simple language. There's not a lot of tenses. And if you need more than two apples, you say apple, apple. Uh-huh. You know, it's
no grammar. So when I say I eat yesterday, I eat tomorrow, I eat 10 years ago.
There's no tense changes. Right. So I've learned it. I'm not an expert, but it wasn't a lot to try and learn Indonesian. Very similar to Malaysian, and Malaysian Indonesian, it's a very simple language. So that made it easy to get all these different cultures to be able to, understand when a government makes an announcement or understand TV or radio.
Yes. Okay, I think we're going to take a little musical break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you just a little bit more about the political system and what's going on, in the political arena. But before we go on, let's talk about the piece that we played starting the show. Can you talk? Who?
The gamelan. Yes. The gamelan, the violin you just heard is from, it was played by the
local group,
the local gamelan
group.
Yeah. And the director is actually the director and the players, they are all American. So I'm very embarrassed about it, but we just don't have enough Indonesian, talented Indonesian. And this group are very talented. It's very talented. And
but that album is actually a few years old, and there was about five or six Indonesians when that album was cut that you're listening to now. Uh-huh. And even I was on that album playing one of the easy instruments.
Yes.
But
and this group is going to have a spring concert, and Pat, the director, wanted me to mention that this gamelan is going to be playing March 26, 2016, 7:30 at the, what is it?
Quixotic Studios,
Studios.
And 16th and Broadway, across from the Kauffman Center.
It's free.
It's free. You know, they accept donations, but it's a free concert on Saturday, the 26th, next spring. And his group is called the Gamelan
Gentakasuri.
Gentakasuri. That's the name of the group.
What does that last word mean? What does it mean?
Genta means sound of the gong.
And kasturi?
Kasturi is blooming flowers.
Okay.
So the gamelan of the
blooming, sound blooming, yeah, is
the sound of a blooming flower, yeah. Of a blooming flower. Hmm.
Okay, and I'm so sorry about this phone. The next song we're gonna play. Was it number one you asked me to play, or number 10?
Number one.
Number one.
Dagu.
Okay. And who plays on that tune? Who's the artist?
Actually, is a. The artist is just local artist from Indonesia. But the song is an ancient, right? It's really old song, and it's from Batak, from his tribe.
Okay, so do you know what the song is about? What
I
is
know
the title?
It's about how big love is a parent to his sons or his sons. Yeah.
Okay.
The
right.
Kids actually. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a listen. All right. Again, this is Sister G, and here with Global Roots Radio, here to talk about Indonesia with Marty, James, or Jim, Sam,
Jonathan,
and Sam. Okay. Before the break, we talked a little bit about Indonesia and the geography of the place, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the historical a place or years of Indonesia. Has it always been Indonesia? Have all the islands always been united or formed one political unit? Indonesia was colonized by the Dutch, you told me. So what was Indonesia like before it was colonized? And then who decided how it was going to, what it was going to look like after colonization?
Yeah. The Indonesia declared the independence on August 17th, 1945. So we just had our 70th birthday.
Independence Day.
Independence Day. And so in Indonesia actually is two words coming from the language from Greek, I think, Indos-Nenesos. Means islands next to India. And I think from what I read, Indonesia was found by, not found, but the Dutch came to Indonesia because by mistake, because they thought Indonesia was India. And because they heard a lot of good thing about India, about spices and stuff, and then they ended up, they went too far, went to Indonesia, and then they found spices, more spices than in India.
So they used to call the Indonesian the Spice Islands because they could find such a variety of spices there, like nutmeg and other spices. And so 350 years before that independence was the Dutch kind of had colonized Indonesia. They, you know, brought in their architecture and had little villages that before that Indonesia was mostly just, you know, tribal people in jungles or on beaches. It wasn't, there were no big cities. So in some ways the Dutch did kind of help them develop a system of government, you know, a lot of the ways that they, when they declared their independence, they had only seen Dutch rule, so they kind of modeled a lot of that after the Dutch, you know, judicial system.
So Indonesian first president was Sukarno, and a lot of people heard about it when he was the one who declared the independence in 1945.
But how did they achieve independence? There was a struggle?
Or
did
big fight.
Dutch just say, okay.
If you remember, that was right.
Big fight, right? Well, during the World War II.
Yes. And the other problem was the Japanese were starting to invade. So the Dutch, if they stayed, would have had to help defend Indonesia.
But
I think they said, should we defend Indonesia or get out of town? And they decided to get out of town, which made Indonesians kind of mad because they thought, hey, I thought we were brothers, you know, buddies, you know, let's. But they didn't want to stay and take care of the Indonesians. So the Indonesians kind of had a bad taste in their mouth right as soon as they waved to the Dutch leaving because the Japanese were ready to come in and really take over and wanted the Indonesian islands themselves.
So, yeah, that was bad. And then Japanese was even worse.
And also, I get, if you remember, August 6th and August 9th when the United States troop bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it helps Indonesia to proclaim their Independence Day because it kind of it was a big chaos in, for Japanese people. So during that time, Sukarno, our first president, and our first vice president, Mohammed Hatta, they proclaimed the Independence Day because they heard that, they heard the news from the radio. And then they say, let's declare on Independence Day because, like, now Japanese is during the chaos time. So, I mean, it was really, really bad situation for Japanese, but it's really helpful to turn Indonesian because we can proclaim our Independence Day at that time.
So the Japanese actually did invade?
Yes.
When did that happen?
Until 1949.
42, I think, because 3.5 years they occupied us.
They occupied Indonesia. Wow, yes. Okay. What did that feel like or look like? Or how was it different from the Dutch occupation?
They are both merciless, but Japanese were really bloody. That's what I heard. Yeah, it was really from being bad situation to worse.
I mean, like, Indonesia occupied a lot of countries before, like Portuguese, they come, and then from Spanish, British guys, they come, and then Dutch people. It's not a country, though. It's like a company called VOC. So, and then Japanese come. But I think, like, none of them is good. None of them was good because they occupied us and then they want to take over our country and then want to take all stuff from our countries, take our, like, resources. So I did not know, but I think none wasn't good. I think none was good, yeah.
So did they basically, how should I say, make money off the islands? Did they just basically pay local people nothing for growing spices and just made them kind of work for almost free?
Yes.
And they just took all the profits?
Yes.
Yeah. Like a lot of colonies back in the, right. The early century. Yeah, not very fair trade. Not a lot of
education is really bad
for the future of the place that they occupied. It's pretty much get in, get as much as we can, take it back, and make a lot of money.
Didn't try to develop the country. Didn't try to. So only few old houses that were occupied or built and occupied by the Dutch people. But other than that, no treasure that we can
so keep. So how many years was it occupied again in the islands?
Japanese? Or
three and a half centuries.
All over.
Oh, yeah. Three and a half years.
Wow. Dutch, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very long time.
So probably not very many people remember the time before occupation.
Right. There's not a lot of written, nothing, hardly. Probably not a lot of written history.
Like my grandpa told me when he was young, Japanese occupied the country, but... I mean, he just tells stories. It was so awful, like how he always run, and then how they made clothes from I don't know how you call it, things that you put rice inside it.
The bags, right?
Yeah, the bags. Okay. Yeah, uh-huh. How they make clothes from that. It was bad, but that's all the stories I ever heard from my grandpa.
Mm-hmm. So how did president Sukarno? Why did he become president? What did he do? Was it an election or how
no,
was it?
He was one of the general during the war against the Dutch and the Japanese. But he was president for 22 years. So it's like dictatorship, and then the whole family too taking some position in the government, and then after that Suharto is the next one, and then he was president for 31 years.
31 years.
Yeah.
Was he also a general?
He was also general who took the first president down.
Wow! So you now have been occupied 60 years by the military.
Yes.
Until
1998.
That's when they kind of revolted against Suharto, the public, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they had their first elected president, right? Habibi
was replacing Suharto for just until the election came.
Okay. Yes. So he was appointed.
He was the vice president.
Yeah. And then the next president, the fourth president, was he was not a general, and but he was a religion leader,
religious leader
in Indonesia. But he was pretty old. He was in the wheelchair and then couldn't see.
So why did they pick him?
Maybe because he was...
Who picked him?
It felt wise.
Yeah.
Wise like an owl, you know, wise old man.
Was he still appointed? He was not elected?
They say he was the first democratically elected. Okay. I think he might have been... Was he elected by the people or was he elected by the Congress?
By the Congress.
The Congress.
They hadn't got quite... They weren't... I don't think they had it quite organized enough to get everybody to vote. So I think he was kind of... elected by the Congress, so it still wasn't quite a full-fledged...
And then after 2 years, he was impeached by the parliament.
He was competing with the first candidate, first female candidate for president.
Yeah, and then the next president was a female. And actually, she is the daughter of the first president.
Well, of course, it had to be.
It's
kind of like America. It's like...
Yeah.
You're electing the same people.
Yeah.
There's no one else in this country that can be smart.
Yeah.
Or the new,
corruption is everywhere.
Right, yes.
So, but he was there only for 2 years. And then the next president was SBY or Susilo Budi Bambang Yudhoyono. And then from then we started to elect president only twice, just like United States, but the its term 5 years instead of 4 years.
Okay,
so 10 years.
That last president fulfilled his full 10 years. He was kind of a neat person. He's been to Kansas. Uh-huh. He went to the military school in Leavenworth for 1 year.
Oh, yeah, they have a lot of bad people that go there, and then they do bad things that go back.
But he wasn't so bad. He did do some. He was an improvement.
Yeah.
I don't know where the chart goes, but he was an improvement from the previous presidents. And the president that just was elected last year was Joko Widodo, who was the first president that didn't have ties with the military and was democratically elected, right?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
And you know, when I meet him, he reminds me of Obama. I mean, he's very down to earth, and he really likes to deal with the people and get down and dirty. He's from a smaller town. He's not from the biggest city in the country like most everyone else. He's a neat little guy.
And he was the governor of the capital of Indonesia, Jakarta.
His last job.
But, I mean, 60 years of military rule, what does that look like? And, what you know, how does that shape a country?
I think that it made the people less quick to adapt to democracy like the rest of the world. But I think they're learning faster now with the electronic media and everything.
Yeah. Were people, you know, did they actually suffer under the military rule? Was it certain people?
I think they suffered in that funds weren't spread equally around the country, that there was an upper echelon that was getting all the business and all the... I mean, Indonesia could have been in Japan. I mean, it could have been a powerhouse, maybe, you know, but because of the corruption, things didn't get done as smoothly as they could have.
It's really hard to go against the family of this powerful powerhouse here, because every time we say something, it happened in the past. Before we say something, if you say something about the family or the president, something bad, we could go to jail. But not after, right after, actually after the lady president.
So did the constitution change at some point? Was there a change in the constitution?
The same.
They made changes, definitely made changes with the constitution since Sukarno.
Yes.
The constitution, I think, was rewritten after Suharto, the second military leader. Yes. They rewritten the constitution to make sure they tried to get the voting organized and things like that.
I assume the military still plays a large role.
Not as much as you'd expect. Uh-huh. I mean, they're just like the United States. I think the president is considered the commander in chief in Indonesia.
And so
he is supposed to, and this president doesn't have any military experience, so that's pretty neat that they've got a commander in chief that wasn't a general that could control these generals. But they does have advisors, and the generals are right there.
The previous president, he had to quit from the army before becoming a president.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not in military service.
Okay, that's kind of the political part. In terms, the other question I had was about religion. I assume there is a different religions. There's not just one religion, or is there a dominant religion in Indonesia?
There's definitely a dominant religion. Uh-huh. Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world. I mean, a lot of people don't know. Number one, they don't know it's the fourth largest country in the world, and more than 90% of them are Muslim. But there's,
did you say more than 9?
90. 90% yes. Muslim. Or 87%. Maybe 87%. But
I would have assumed Buddhism or something.
Indonesia. Farther north. Uh-huh. You get up into Cambodia, Thailand.
Well, Indonesia is not... not all Indonesian are Chinese. Different.
Uh-huh.
The native Indonesian is dark, like skin, like me.
Uh-huh.
So we don't consider us as Chinese. We are not Chinese. And then, but when there are Chinese with like this, and the lighter skin,
mm-hmm.
and well, I have the hair is different too. But the native Indonesian, most of us are Muslim, and then there are six religions recognized by the government. And if when you fill up the form and then you don't say what religion you belong to,
uh-huh.
they will think you are communist. So you have to choose one of them.
Yeah. And that's true in a lot of Asian countries. When you have your country ID, you have to have a religion printed on it just so they can kind of keep track of. I know that's true in Malaysia. I've been to Malaysia, and they have their religions printed on their ID card to make sure they know which jail to put you in.
So how did Indonesia become a Muslim country?
I assume the raiders came a long time ago.
And they got married with local people. Yeah.
And hundreds of years ago, probably right around when the Dutch came in, the boat Fallen might have been a boat from the Middle East that brought people that were actually converted the locals.
Was it? Do you think a forced conversion? Or
I mean, also like that, during that time, Buddhism or Hinduism really like come on religions, and they you know about the caste system.
Mm-hmm. That's Hinduism.
And there are people that people don't like it. People didn't like it because why he has a higher position than me, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that's why like when Islam come, there's like oh there is no caste system, so.
They jumped on it.
There is one island that that mostly Hindu. Hindu is the religion in the island. It's Bali.
Oh, okay.
So it still has the caste system.
And it's fun for Indonesians to take a vacation there because they can see different kinds of religious activities. You know, the funeral's different. Everything's different. It's a different culture. So it's not only is it an international destination, but even for Indonesians that can vacation if they're wealthy enough, that's a great place to go for them because it's really unusual
yeah.
culture to watch for
and
them.
Actually, there are several places in the country that you can find the mosque at the same at the same lot or the same block as the church and then temples and all the stuff together. So actually, we are a very peaceful country, even though we are the largest Muslim country in the world. But we are very shocked about what happened in Paris, and it doesn't reflect Muslim or Islam as a religion.
Mm-hmm. So curious, what about indigenous religions? Are they still alive somewhere, or they're just...
I think if you get out, way out of the city,
yeah.
I mean, it's just like in America, maybe, if you go too far out in the country, you're going to find some different things going on, but I'm sure, wouldn't you guys say the same in Indonesia? There's still some, like Papua, and,
yeah.
Yes.
And there's still some, you know, ancient traditions, cannibalism.
Cannibalism.
In Papua. Yeah.
Papua.
There's still cannibals. They, we may not be that familiar with them.
Yeah, they still live in the jungle. They still have war between tribes. They kill each other. I mean, like I remember like 3-4 years ago, there was a really big war between tribe and in one island. So I think it's Kalimantan. They kill each other because... I don't know what
tribal conflicts.
Tribal conflicts, and the cop cannot do anything. They just like watch them like kill each other. I was like, wow.
And it wasn't.
You mean
it wasn't guns, right?
Yeah, it was like arrows,
poison arrows.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So I was like, wow. That's cool, but this is so silly.
Why didn't they interfere?
They just afraid. I mean, also like they also use some magic things. It still exists though in the media. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, let's do a little more music. It's really interesting. I'm learning a lot. should I just pick something? Or
yeah, just pick something.
Should I pick something of this one, maybe? Or
the other one.
The first one.
Just any...
The other one? The one
yeah, just to go to number 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that. Okay, this is Global Roots Radio, and today we are getting to know Indonesia. And again, this is Global Roots Radio. Welcome back. Today we are talking about Indonesia, and had a real interesting first hour. Learned a lot about the history of Indonesia, the political system, and the geography, a little bit about the religion. And now I'm going to, then climate change came up somewhere. I wanted to ask you guys if the global climate change also has affected Indonesia. I know we hear about islands in the Pacific basically disappearing because of the rising sea levels. So what is going on in Indonesia?
Indonesia has a 2 season, like dry season and also rain season. But maybe since like 5 years ago, we usually can tell which months we will have dry season and which month we will have rain season. But like right now, we cannot tell. Like maybe today will be like rain and tomorrow will be like dry for whole weeks and then rain again for another whole weeks and then just stop like dry for 3 months and then start raining for 2 weeks. So it's kind of like people cannot predict anymore like when is the dry season, when is the rain season, it's because of the climate change.
And for farmers, that wreaks havoc. You know, I mean, they have to kind of plan. They used to plan, okay, I know those months are going to be rainy season. I'm going to plant the rice so we have all that rain so my rice doesn't dry out. But when it rains for 2 days and then it's dry for 3 months and then you get a week of rain, it just, yeah, it screws up the system. So that's a big change. And so now, and people expect certain fruits to have their season, like the mango season and the coconut season. I mean, there's a fruit called the rambutan, and everybody looks forward to it. But now they're all getting confused. The plants are confused, I guess, too, and they're not producing like they used to all at one time. So
what is the fruit you just mentioned? Rambutan?
Rambutan. Yeah. Why don't you say it's actually rambut means
hair.
And rutan is jungle, so it looks like it's a red fruit with little hair coming out of it. So it's like a hairy fruit.
Yeah.
You open it up and there's a nice little
it's like a white,
white fruit inside. Fruit. It's a neat little fruit.
And durian. We're talking about fruit now. Durian is a famous stinky fruit. But you either like it or hate it. You know, like I like it. I like it a lot, but Jim will not eat it because it smells really bad. But it's spiky. It's the fruit is pretty big, it's bigger than coconut, but it's spiky. So just be careful. Don't stand under the tree because you will.
But it does smell. You'll be driving if you are in Indonesia. There'll be a sign on the bus: don't bring a durian on this bus because they don't want to smell up the whole bus.
Oh, the airplane.
A lot of airplanes will have a sign: do not bring your durian on this plane. Yeah. But it is something they have. You know, the world's so close now that we found them in the local Asian store here.
You can find
they freeze them, I guess, to keep them from smelling so much.
Yeah. Talking about climate change, I remember my sister was telling me about the sea level gone up, and then now it's seeping into the water. The salt water is seeping into the well, and it's getting harder now to get the safe drinking water.
Mm-hmm. So, what are some of the solutions? I don't know what do people do? You know.
We still boil water, and then I think hopefully government will start distilling water from the ocean, hopefully, because right now we use the water because we have a lot of mountains, so the water coming from the mountain is very clean and safe usually, but it's starting to.
And another big climate issue in Indonesia is the clearing of the forests for either clearing the forest for the paper or the pulp from the trees, or just clearing the forest so they can plant palm oil plantations, which I don't know, you know, you've heard on KKFI, but palm oil's in everything. Detergent, you know, paper,
so
clothes, shampoo. I mean, it's something that everybody in the world uses, and so it's a valuable crop to put in, and so it's worth it for them to illegally burn huge amounts of the forest and the jungle.
So we are losing the animals,
orangutan, the rhinoceros, little elephants that they have there.
Lions. Komodo, luckily or unluckily, Komodo lives only in one island. It's called Komodo Island. It's just east of the island of Bali, a small island. But, it's really sad. As Indonesian, we are really frustrated, and we wish that the government do more to preserve the nature, the fauna, and the culture.
As we said, though, Indonesia is a huge country, and it's just like, I mean, it's as wide as America is wide. And to be able to watch, I mean, even in America, we can't watch every inch of the country. And somebody could, you know, be in the middle of Colorado and have a secret farm or start a fire, and we wouldn't know about it. So it's easy to sit back and say, oh, the government should just fix everything, but I know that this, even this new guy wants to try, but it's a big job, like it is anywhere. But hopefully, you know, they can try, and they'll keep trying it and just inch their way toward making it better and better. But the going back to the fires, those fires they start are causing trouble in other countries, too. The smoke, these big, huge clouds of smoke are going over to Singapore and Malaysia and other countries. So they're getting complaints from other countries, hey, stop sending your smoke over our country.
Yeah.
And even for the humans that are in Sumatra where the fires are, the kids are having health problems now and getting asthma and all kinds of problems that they didn't have before. So that's putting a strain on the local resources to find more doctors and hospital beds. And
so is it like a big company that buys up the land, or who's doing the who's causing the trouble?
I mean, it's both. I mean, there's big companies and little companies. I mean, do you know more about it, Jonathan?
Palm oil. Yeah. So my parents, they have business in palm oil, and then they told me like some companies they burn forests. They burn down forests to start palm oil companies to grow palm oil trees. And like 2-3 months ago, it was smoky in the island of Sumatra in Kalimantan. But actually, no one knows. No one knows who started the fire. Mm. But my dad called me a week ago, and then he told me 100 people died because of the smokes. It was really bad. And then when he came to visit, it was just smoke everywhere.
Yeah. When somebody started, we couldn't stop it because it just kept burning and burning, and then take over the whole island. And we already requested help from Singapore, from Malaysia, with the water and the airplane, but still that's not enough. And long drought, it helped too with the
climate change problem. Yeah. Yeah. The forest is drier than it's been at times, you know, and so that makes the forest burn easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just have to let folks know that they're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and me here on Global Roots Radio discussing Indonesia. We're just kind of talking about the effects of climate change taking place in Indonesia and the causes of it, of course. And
I'm sure that I've been reading too about Tahiti and the islands in the Pacific sinking, or not sinking, but the water raising, and I'm sure that probably is happening in a lot of especially uninhabited islands. There's so many islands in Indonesia, and that it happens so gradually that the people are so good at adapting to things that they just build a wall higher, to keep the water out. But I think that as it gets closer and closer to the big cities where news makes more news, I think that it'll hit the people harder, and they'll try and change things.
Okay. Okay, I tell you what, we're going to play some more music, and then when we come back, I would like to maybe talk about what kind of structures people live in and how they're built and how are they adapted to, living with a lot of water and environments. So, okay? All right. And we are back. Sister G here with Global Roots Radio, and I'm going to let Marty reintroduce the guest.
Yes. He has been very shy, but here he is, Sam. He has been here he went to school here in the United States, and his family actually is back home in Indonesia right now for 6 months. And please, Sam, introduce yourself.
Sam's a Sooner. He went to school in Oklahoma.
Yes,
Boomer Sooner.
So I was just curious, about traditional housing styles or even modern ones. I'm sure they are influenced by tradition in some way.
There are not many in Jakarta. There are not many traditional homes right now because, when I was growing up, I live in a house that was built by Dutch. So it's when I went to the Netherlands, I said, that looks like my house. It's really nice. It's really neat. To find out about that, but traditional houses in Indonesia usually in a small area, still in the islands, and it's because it's harder to build, and they are made of silt, right, Jonathan?
Yes, it's made of silt.
Made of what?
Wood and sitting on the stilts.
Oh, they're sitting on stilts. So they're okay.
Yeah. So the housing, traditional housing in Indonesia, like most of them, they're made of steel because it helps people. It helps the people who lives in the house to not get attacked by like wild animal. And then like some of them, they build steel on the water. And like some of them also, you build a house on steel because they put like livestock behind the house.
Underneath
the house. Underneath the house. So that's kind of like really common traditional housing in Indonesia.
But the actual material is wood, right?
It's wood. It's wood.
Wood and bamboo.
And the houses are on stilts.
Okay.
So I didn't want to think that they have houses of steel.
Oh, no.
Stilts.
Wood, bamboo, yeah.
Or bamboo, yeah. Bamboo is another product that they make the housing out of.
And then for the roof, they use grass or coconut leaves.
Okay.
And also, there is an interesting fact about housing in one traditional house in Indonesia. They use from a cow poo.
Uh huh. Yeah.
They use it as a floor. It's kind of like really interesting right now because people like do a lot of research about that, how it can happen, and then it's kind of like really really new research also because it's kind of stronger than the floor that we use right now.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't smell good. It doesn't smell as bad. It doesn't smell
well,
bad.
Yeah, I am sure it loses its odor, yes.
Yeah.
So it's tried, done.
Yeah, there is one tried.
And then you press it in a certain way? Or
I have no idea, but it's like really, really interesting.
Yeah. And what kind of, you said livestock, so I guess what kind of animals are being raised for people to eat? To feed themselves?
Yeah. Each family, especially when you go out in the countryside, it's pretty holistic living. They you know, they'll have chickens running around the yard, and if they're lucky, they might have a big cow or
goat.
Goat, yeah. Don't forget the family goat. Maybe anything else? A duck. I've seen a couple ducks ducks around.
No pigs.
Not for the Muslims.
No.
there is one. I do know that there's lots of wild pigs. It's a big problem over there that they have these. They're huge. The wild boars. I mean, almost like a rhinoceros size. I mean, the government does pay people to try and hunt them down because they'll root up all the crops and they ruin housing and they're scary for the people. They can hurt people too. So, but if they do kill those animals, usually the boars, they send the money. They send the carcasses to Singapore where they do eat the pork. Or there's some villages that aren't that Muslim that will eat the wild boar.
Uh-huh. And let's be talking about food. Let's talk about food. What do Indonesians eat? Or is there also a strong regional aspect to food?
Yes. It's so fun talking about food. I really miss Indonesian food. But it's really like in the United States, when you go everywhere, you will find McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and all these companies. So everywhere we go, it's like you don't go anywhere, right? Because you will find the same thing, except Kansas City, maybe barbecue. But in Indonesia, each region, each city has its own traditional food.
Each city.
Pretty much. So, cannot be found or will not be the same if you, like in where you live. So, we have to go to that place to get it. And, oh my gosh, it's just unbelievable how much variety of food that you can find in Indonesia. And it's really funny when we were traveling to a small island next to Bali, it's called Lombok, and it's Lombok. And then we asked the driver, what should we eat? And then the driver said, let me find you something to eat. So we just hopped to the taxi, and then he just drove us to the restaurant. And then we ordered chicken. Because what else? You know, chicken or ducks or whatever. the choices. So we said, okay, just chicken. And the restaurant is actually on stilts on top of paddy field. And with a lot of chicken around it. So it's really neat. So when the chicken came, when our order came, and still had, the chicken still had the head.
And a couple feathers.
And a couple feathers. And it's like,
this is a trip we took with our kids. So Marty, myself, and our three kids, and they looked, and they looked like they thought a chicken had gotten run over by a car, and they put it on a plate.
Yeah.
And it just looked like a flattened chicken, like a cartoon character.
And then this is like the chicken, like, was that one of the chickens down there? Oh my gosh, I don't want to eat it. And my children are so funny.
But Marty could tell that it was a chicken. It was that little island style of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, you know, this is Lombok chicken, and this is the way they eat it here. And it was famous way, and the spices they use were special just for that island's chicken. So,
what spices do they use? What makes it?
The way they prepare is different than the Javanese would. So it was spicy, and I don't know, it was deep fried. I don't remember, but because the children were screaming and stuff, so I just, okay, don't eat it.
Another thing that Indonesia is famous for, they don't have a lot of meat in their diet. I mean, when I go to a restaurant, a big pile of rice, little piece of chicken over here, and a little cucumber. So, I mean, it's definitely a rice-based diet, usually, in most households. But one of our most famous cooks here in Kansas City is Sam's wife. She's famous in the two-state area for making a special kind of tofu.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us about the tofu?
Oh, tempeh.
Oh, tempeh.
Tempeh,
because it's a high protein. High protein. How did your wife make the tempeh? Can you tell us any secret?
He made it. He's the one who made it.
The secret's out.
It's a secret. It's a bean. It's called tempeh. You know, you can find it in regular store, like natural food store. And it's a bean.
But even Marty and the other Indonesians can tell.
So what makes it so good?
Right.
You know.
It's fermented.
But yours, you know.
We use to make tempeh. We make tempeh using, what's that, mung bean?
Mung bean?
Not mung bean. It's a special bean.
Soybean.
Okay.
And then we use special yeast
from Indonesia.
To make tempeh. It takes a couple of days from scratch to finish.
And how do you make it? Okay, so you take the soya beans, and what do you do with the soya beans?
We clean them and we boil, and then we mix with the yeast, and then we just leave it
to ferment.
Yeah, to ferment.
Uh huh. Okay, and then so that takes 3 days, 3-4 days.
Uh-huh. 3 days.
Uh huh.
Maybe it depends on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he makes the best tempeh.
So I think maybe Indonesians have a very, their palate is maybe better than mine, because I have trouble telling the difference between, you know, hamburgers and, you know, everything. But they can tell that this tempeh is different. It reminds them of home, and it's a different tempeh. I mean, it's just like the languages and everything is so many different things, the levels of this and different. The food's the same way. I mean, they have so many different kinds of bananas. You know, we have a banana. But in Indonesia, they've got baby banana, big banana, long banana, wild banana, rainy banana. You know, they got these all different kinds of bananas.
There is a dish from Central Java. It's made of jackfruit. And then when my husband tasted it first time, he didn't know it was fruit.
I'm a native of Kansas City, so I took this dish and I was eating it
a couple of times.
This is great. This is the best barbecue I've had.
He told everyone,
than Kansas City barbecue. What kind of meat is this? I kept on asking,
He had third.
I didn't really understand the language. This is when I first met Mari, one of the first trips we took together over there. And nobody understood what I was saying when I said, what kind of meat is it? They said, yeah, it's good. Okay, here's some more. And I ate some more.
Didn't know it was not meat.
So is it chicken? Is it beef? Is it some, you know, lamb, goat? What is it? And then finally,
it's jackfruit.
Jackfruit.
I actually know about, there's a vegan restaurant in town. Yeah. They use jackfruit to mimic meat.
Yes.
They told me.
So what else? What else are your, you know, the big fruits and fruits for that matter? What is a mango? Mango, obviously.
Yeah.
Coconuts. What do you use coconut?
We use coconut on almost every dishes.
Coconut milk, coconut oil,
and then also the famous dish from Sumatra is called rendang. It's a beef curry, but it's a dried beef curry. So there's no juice. It's really good, and you eat it with. You can just have a little bit and eat it with a lot of hot rice. Oh.
It's almost like a thin beef jerky, you know, like shredded beef jerky almost, except even better. Because they know it was from Indonesia if they tried it.
Very tasty. And if you can also get the same kind of dish from other country, from Malaysia or from Singapore, but it's not the same. I can tell. We Indonesian can tell. Oh, no, this is not rendang.
So now you all come from different regions, right?
Yes.
So, okay, what is like the dish from your region, and then if you would mind tell me what yours is and yours, and see if that it's different or yeah.
The dish from my region is sweet and salty.
I'm from Bandung, West Java. The dish in from my region kind of mix between the taste mix between the East Java and Sumatra. So. It has sweet and spicy.
Yeah, I come from. I was born in Medan. It's a capital city of North Sumatra. It's a Sumatra island, and usually when people says about our tribe Bataknese, we're really famous of like spicy food. So like me, I really really like to eat spicy food. We use a lot of peppers and a lot of chili. Onion, garlic, and it's really spicy food.
So is the main food source is rice? I mean, is that what is always on your dish? It's always rice.
Rice, yes. And then also we have gado-gado, which is like salad, but we put a lot of stuff inside, and then with the peanut sauce. Spicy, we like a lot of spice. And then also for Sundanese, really famous with salsa, hot salsa or sambal. And then there are several kind of salsa. And although they are all spicy, but some of them has a fish taste, and the other one has a lot of tomatoes, right? And we'll just dip the vegetable to the salsa, and then eat it just like salad.
Since you mentioned fish, you must be eating a whole lot of fish.
Oh, a lot of fish, yeah.
So what kind of fish? What is that like? What are your fish dishes?
I don't eat that much variety of fish. We mostly eat goldfish.
Goldfish. Yes. Oh, no, it's different. It's not like the goldfish. Because it's gold, the color is gold, but it's big. It's a big fish. We call it gold, but it's not the same. The pet.
It's not the little goldfish.
No.
And what kind of, if you had to describe the taste of it, how could you describe the taste of a goldfish?
I think it's richer than tilapia.
Uh-huh. Yes, and I think for goldfish, more bone in it compared to tilapia.
So how would you cook a goldfish dish? What kind of ingredients would you use, and how would you prepare it? Would you barbecue it, or how would you cook it?
My wife used to cook goldfish like deep fried, and then put some chili. Sambal, or sometimes she steam it. She put some spice and then wrap with banana leaf, and then steam it.
So yeah, I've seen this before. So you can wrap whatever you want to cook into banana leaves, and then you stick it in the oven?
Steam them.
Steamer. Okay.
Yeah. And then after we are done with steaming, we can put it in the oven and then heat.
So why use banana leaf? Is that, does it add taste, or is it just a way of cooking?
I think add some taste also. Uh-huh. It will taste different if we use banana leaf. And if we use aluminum foil,
okay,
that's better using banana leaf.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then coconut leaves. So we wrap rice in coconut leaves for big celebration like the end of Ramadan or for other big events. And we wrap, make a shape of a box made of coconut leaves, and then we fill in the box with rice. And then we steam it for a long time, and it become, and we cut them up to, you know, make a cube, rice cube.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
It's
sounds really delicious. I mean, I'd like to have some.
Yeah, you are welcome to come to our ethnic festival. Hopefully, we'll have some. The ethnic festival,
like in August.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, 19th, 20th, 21st. August next summer.
I tell you what, let's play a little more music, and I think when I come back, I want to talk just a little more about food, and I want to talk about the sweet things that you might eat, or what do you call desserts. All right? Okay, let's go. Yes, and this is again Sister G with Global Roots Radio. We only have 30 minutes left to continue talking about and finding out things about Indonesia that I know I had no idea. And we were just as we played, oh, first let's talk about the song that we just played. Yeah,
the song is called
Bengawan Solo.
Bengawan Solo is the longest river in the island of Java.
And so the song is about the river?
Yeah, the river.
And people feel really connected to the river?
Connected to the river. Yeah. And because of this song, this song make it famous. But it's drying out. It's really sad.
Now, why is it drying out?
Okay. Now, are we going to talk about the food again? Oh,
so,
yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So you said because of climate change, the river is drying out.
Change,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, and because you don't get as much rain anymore, or what causes it to dry out?
Because the weather itself, like the temperature is really, really warm right now in Indonesia. It's I remember when I was a kid, I can't sleep without air conditioner, but right now. Man, it's hot.
It's that hot.
Uh-huh. It's hot.
Uh-huh.
Even if you go outside, like just go from the building or from the building, it's so hot. It's
hot.
Like, yeah.
Okay. And because of the population, probably, and so many people use it for irrigation for the paddy fields and stuff. So at the end of the river, there's nothing left. Then water from the ocean is starting to come in.
Oh, okay. Okay, so we wanted to finish talking about food, and we wanted to speak a little more about what I guess here in the West they call desserts, sweet stuff. What is typical in Indonesia in terms of what people love to eat? That's kind of not necessarily food that you eat because it's, you know, it's lunchtime, but kind of in between time or breakfast or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you about a snack that my daughter went to school over there last year, and at university, and it's a snack, but it's not really a dessert, but it's a funny story. So I thought, well, they're thinking of desserts, I'll let you hear this story. They have a little snack. It's a little ball of rice with a little bit of chicken in the middle. So it would kind of, you know, the chicken would kind of seep into the rice a little bit. And then it's all wrapped up in like a banana leaf. And it's you know, maybe an inch and a half by an inch and a half small. And they call it nasi kucing, which is rice for a cat. So it's like a little cat snack.
Oh, okay.
So it's just enough to, you know, soothe your stomach for a little while. And she unwraps it and she eats it. And it was a great snack for her because it's really cheap. and it tastes good. She loves it. So she's famous with all her friends because she likes the little kitty snack is what they call it. A lot of people like it. It's like a little snack to tide you over to lunch or dinner. But it was, we thought it was, that was, when I heard that story, I thought it was so funny that she was having little kitty snacks while she was over there. But do Indonesians usually have a dessert, Jonathan?
No. Well, we Indonesian eat rice three times a day, you know, like breakfast rice, lunch rice, and dinner rice. But we, our dinner is really late, so we have, between lunch and dinner, we have snack. Just probably like European, right? So we have a snack time or tea time about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and usually deep fried stuff and with tea.
Mm-hmm. And so is the rice that you eat in the morning different from the rice that you eat at lunch or in the evening?
The rice usually in the morning is usually fried rice, something simple, something with rice, rice with egg, rice with something. But lunch probably. A little bit more stuff on it.
Bigger size.
Okay, just bigger.
I don't know if you have been to, you know, rice stuffle, in, you know, like rice stuffle stuff, but it's a smaller portion. And dinner usually is much bigger.
So, all the wonderful tropical fruits that you get in Indonesia, is that not considered a snack or dessert? Or?
We don't have it as a dessert. So there is no such word for dessert in Indonesia. Okay. We just eat it throughout the day.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Indonesia. Indonesia is not a wealthy country, so there's a lot of people who are just happy to have that rice three times a day. And maybe it's just rice. But, I mean, there are people that, yeah, you get to have fruit and chocolate and things like that. Chocolate. You like chocolate. A lot of people like chocolate, but it's very expensive. Uh-huh. But I think that's a snack, a sweet snack that a lot of people like. But I'd say if I'm traveling around, more often than not, if I'm in a little town and they want to invite you in as a guest, because I remember there's one little town, and I think we were walking down the street, and almost every door, they'd open the door, hey, come up and have, and we'd sit down, and they have really sweet hot tea. That was a big thing. And then what kind of snacks would they offer, Marty?
Anything they have, and then they will fry. If we decline, it will, will make them feel bad. So we try to eat a little bit and then drink the sweet tea and then leave again. And then the next house, the same thing, and then different snack. Sometimes big meal. Sometimes they fry fish, especially for us. So.
The one thing I learned when I was on that little trip was that the poorer the family, the sweeter the tea, they just really fill it up with sugar. So you knew, wow, this I could barely drink, it's so sweet. That meant the family was kind of struggling. But,
what's the relationship between...
I think it's because they didn't have something else. They really wanted the sweet. They really wanted to make sure you knew we had sweet tea. But,
We are talking about visiting a small village.
A really small town. Yeah, it's not something you do in the big city, but in a little village.
So how does a small village look different from, I don't know, a city that has 10,000 people? Is the infrastructure the same? Do they, you know? No?
Different.
No. It's so different. I mean, from the housing, from the people, also, like, it's the same, like, Kansas City, New York City, people are different, right? It's also the same, like, Indonesia, if you come from big city or small city, it's also different. Like, in small city, people can talk to each other, just say hi in the morning, but in Jakarta, like, in capitals, no one will say hi to everybody. And also, like usually, like, in small city, you can see, like a brush field, and then you can still see farmers, that kind of stuff, but not in big city. And also, usually, the weather is much nicer, and then it's clear.
No pollution.
No pollution. Mm-hmm. It's not like a big city. Yeah, so it's kind of really... interesting. You can see like green things like a grass. Yeah, so it's just like really different. You can tell. Yeah.
Do you have like paved streets that go into everywhere? Or what is the infrastructure look like in terms of public transportation?
Right. Yeah. I think you can definitely when you're going to a smaller city and smaller until you get to a village where it is just dirt paths. And the public transportation is a guy with a with a little donkey in a little cart. And they, you know, that's then you're getting pretty far out there with no you know, just dirt trails and a lot of, you know, it is grass because there's no sidewalks, nobody's mowing the city streets. There is no city streets, it's just the village. And then, but a neat thing about it, though, I think, is that there's, as it gets smaller, and maybe that's the same in America, you know, the community gets stronger. I mean, if somebody's house burns down in one of those little villages, everybody will come together and help that guy rebuild, and he's part of a family community in those villages. When I visited the little towns, that's what I felt like. You know, everybody kind of knew each other, and it was a lot of support.
And how would they make a living in small cities? I mean, towns, not cities, villages. Is it agriculture? It's basically self-sustaining.
Agriculture and just the local, you know, small trade of you know, somebody selling, you know, like a little general, not even a general store, you know, somebody that's selling
trinkets,
little snack shop, you know, a little snack shop, or somebody that makes the little cat snacks. He could be on the side of the road, you know, selling those. And a lot of times, just for people traveling through, if they're near a road, is always a big thing for the smaller village. They can sell their local food that everybody's looking forward to. Oh, let's stop at that little snack place and get that fruit or that snack that they're famous for.
So what about like traditional arts? What is Indonesia known for in terms of creating craft objects?
Yeah,
or
I
art
think
objects?
They have more people in the small town. They have more time doing stuff like. We have wooden carved furniture in our house. I don't know how, if we start, I don't know when we are going to finish it because it's very intricate. And also for the gamelan, it's all handmade. For example, the instrument here, I'm showing Season G, but the picture of the gamelan. It's
hand carved
and hand painted. And everything is all hand. Even the metal part, it's hand pound. Hand pound.
The metal, the brass. It's all done by hand. But yeah, there's also clay pottery. I've seen clay, you know, pottery and things made out of clay, and just paintings. I mean, I think paintings are famous.
Batik! Yeah. Indonesia is very famous for batik. Yes, we are very proud.
even in Olive Raja, I think that most people realize that Indonesia makes the best batik. They're pretty famous for it. Batik is a wax on cloth to make shirts or sheets or.
It's a long process to make.
It's not just, you know, talking about, like, you know, the hippie batik thing here in the States. It's a lot more elaborate. I mean, if you look at the patterns, how are they able to make all those patterns?
Yes.
A lot of it's hand done, and it's just like the food. Marty can tell, oh, that batik, you're from that part of Indonesia. Yes. Oh, that batik, you're from over there. Each little area is famous for their style. Maybe not that
style
exact
and the
print,
color and the color.
But the colors and the style are very local specific. So it's a neat, another neat thing that sets them apart but brings them together because they all know about each, you know, each other's batik style.
Every pattern also has different meaning. Every pattern of the batik they have different meaning. Mm-hmm. So like this pattern is for people like for regular people, like this kind of patterns for people just go like for formal event. So it's kind of like they also have different meaning in the pattern of the pattern of the batik. So yeah, it's like love pattern also. So and it's they have different meaning.
And do also the different colors.
Colors
are they produced from local sources, or is it like the color is made?
It's made
using fruits. Or?
Yes, from trees. Uh-huh. Natural colors from trees. And then like Jonathan said, there are also still two sultanates in Indonesia still exist. And then if the batik that they are wearing is completely different than the local people, so the sultan wear different kind of prints. Then
sultan's like kind of like a king.
The king,
oh,
yeah.
You have sultans?
Yeah, yeah, we still have two. Yeah.
They're like governors of a state. Oh, so yeah. Instead of being a governor that's elected, they're these. It's a king position.
There was a king. There was a king when there was a king back in the time.
And still king. He's still.
That's the king of the province. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So there is one state or...
That's interesting, though. That's more like the local government. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. That's really... So you have a sultan who... How do you get that position? How do you get to be a sultan?
Born.
It's born like, into
born.
A king.
Like he, yeah.
You're born as a king. He was born as a sultan, so...
So this area is under the sultanate. Only two small areas in Indonesia. I mean, it's still under two sultanates, two different sultanates. And one is Yogyakarta. Is a sultan, is the Sultan Hamengkubuwono, the something. It's really famous, and then there are people usually very loyal to the family. And it's... very interesting, and then everything, the culture, everything is still being kept by the sultanate. And if you go to the area, it's and if they have the first what is it, surah is the first year in Islam
calendar
in Islamic calendar, and then they have big celebration, and then the whole carriage and everything so come out.
So what kind of authority does he have? Within
same as governor.
Uh-huh. So he decides, he makes all the decisions?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Huh. See, I didn't know. No idea. I mean, there were sultans in Indonesia.
I mean, I think it's before it becomes Indonesia, it's like a lot of kingdoms in Indonesia. So.
And like in Malaysia, they still have sultans are still leaders in each, maybe not every state, but most states have their sultan that you're born into each state. And they all get together and make group decisions at the capital. They're not as, I mean, I guess, I don't know if they're total, that they have total control over everything. There's still federal, you know, things that happen that they have to pay attention to, I think. It's not like their own little kingdom where anything can happen and they're the only ones in charge.
But they have like authority over, do they get money then from the people or from the government, the federal government?
The
sultan.
From the people and from the government too, yes.
So they have to, they take in taxes from the people also.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's the same thing. It's a local government, the same, but it's an instead of governor, it's under the sultan.
And do they pay for schools? Who pays for school? Education.
In the children,
elementary. Yeah.
Elementary.
It's generally all over Indonesia.
Yeah.
It's elementary is free. Elementary until high school is free, right?
For public, yeah.
For public is free.
For private, you need to pay. Yeah.
Yeah,
but just, like start like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think.
But if there is payment, probably a little bit just for books. Mm-hmm. But even a little, some people in the villages sometimes they don't have money to pay for the books. But
it's got a, I mean, for sure the majority of the kids are getting education, but there's still some that are just barely on the edge. You know, that can't find enough money for the books. You know, you think. For us, it sounds like, oh, it's just a couple, you know, $20 or $30. But for somebody that makes $50 a year, that's half the money for the year, you know. I mean, there's some people that really live on very little in Indonesia when you get out of the cities.
And then university, the fee is very minimum in public school, but to go in is really hard. And then right now, government, a couple of years ago, government realized that they have so much money in education, so they are giving away a lot of scholarship to Indonesian students to study abroad.
Oh, okay.
So it's getting. I think we try to educate and then to educate the local Indonesian to higher level, and then there are a lot of smart people in Indonesia.
And then I mean, I don't mean to be prejudiced, but. You know, Muslims countries are usually known to, you know, don't put women on the same level as men. So, in terms of education, what does that look like in Indonesia for women?
Well, Islam in Indonesia is not the same as in Arab. We are very liberal, I guess. What do you call that?
Pretty equal.
Equal. Yeah. So we.
The government's really careful not to mix religion and state. It's very separate now, and so that and the male and female. They try, and I'd say they're on the equal footing. They're trying to. I mean, Indonesia had a female president already, and that's pretty impressive for a Muslim country.
And the new president elected almost half of his ministers female.
Mm-hmm. So what about professionals like physicians or lawyers or engineers? What does that look like?
If not better, right?
I mean, like Indonesia is like really famous because I mean like the most Muslim populous country in the world, but actually it's not a Muslim country.
Yeah.
So I mean it's not like Saudi Arabia or like other Muslim countries, so it's kind of different, yeah.
Because it's separate.
Yeah.
The religion.
Yeah.
You think 90% Muslim, right. It'd be easy to say we're going to be a Muslim country, but that would really make it hard for that 13% that's not Muslim. And so I think they wanted to make sure it was an equal life for everybody, for men, for women, for Hindus, for Jewish, for Catholics. And so they that's in the Constitution. I think they probably have a little ways to go. Almost every country has a ways to go on equality. I'm sure there's still pockets in the countryside where maybe women aren't treated as fair as they should be. But I think in the big cities, it's pretty easy.
But even though in small villages, if you are a smart woman, you can excel too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we don't have much time left. We're going to play a little song and come back. And I think I want to use the rest of the time that we might have, a couple of minutes or so, to talk about music just a little bit. Okay? All right. Let me see. I think this is where I go. Okay, back with Global Roots Radio. We don't have much time, but definitely wanted to touch upon music and traditional music of Indonesia. And then Marty also dances
I dance sometimes for with the gamelan. The gamelan here in Kansas City is originally from Bali, and actually it was brought here by UMKC, and then now under direction of Pat Conway.
Where are you, Pat?
Huh. We are waiting for you, Pat. It's almost over. But
so what does gamelan mean?
Gamelan is probably the best translation would be orchestra. It's an Indonesian orchestra with Indonesian instruments, nothing that you'd hear in the United States. It's a lot of different, and Patrick, I hope I'm not getting it wrong, but it's a bunch of different sized xylophone type instruments with brass keys, and then also drums and other types of percussion. The very percussion, if you like percussion, you'd love the gamelan.
Yeah. And the one from here is the one you heard earlier is from Bali, and then we also have gamelan from Central Java, and then gamelan from West Java, where Sam is from.
And just like the food, you'd know, I mean, the Indonesians can tell, oh, that's a Balinese gamelan, oh, that's a Western Javanese gamelan. They can tell the difference between the two, even though I wouldn't know.
So does each village have their own orchestra, or how intertwined is it with a culture? Is music being made?
Not every single village has a gamelan, but I think that when you get into Java out in the countryside, that they each have their own little group that would get together and perform, and the group of kids would be dancing with it, and there'd be somebody telling a story, maybe. Another thing that we didn't touch on was the wayang puppets. There's also puppets are very famous in Javanese history, but that's mainly in Java, I think, where they have the stick puppets where they do a show, and they can last 8, 9, 10 hours.
But
we're talking about music, so.
So gamelan only in Bali and Java, and then we also have instrument called angklung. Is originated from West Java and is from Sunda, Sundanese, and it's made of bamboo. Sam, you want to explain it a little bit?
Angklung made from bamboo. It has different size and different note.
Right now we've each got one in our hand, so each of us has a different note that we can play real quick. So I'll let Marty play yours.
Okay, this sound, that's G, basic G.
I'm not sure what note I play.
Mine is D.
Huh. Mine is F.
Okay, let's play together.
So if we were in a group, we could probably make a song. But I mean, we haven't practiced or anything.
I saw on YouTube a group of Indonesian playing this with in Germany in orchestra. It's really beautiful. But yeah, sometimes it can be done by one person running around or several people in a.
And what significance does the dance have within that gamelan orchestra?
Each song is kind of a story. I mean, they'll play a musical song that is a story, like one of the most famous ones that Marty and my daughters do is Bird of Paradise. It's this display of the Bird of Paradise and his kind of a mating ritual, like they want to try and attract the male. The male trying to attract the female. A courting song. Uh-huh. Trying to attract the female bird. So.
And what kind of movements do you use?
Movement. Eyes movement, fingers, hand, and legs.
A lot of gold. Gold.
Yes. It's very complicated dance and very energetic. Energetic. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't have much time. But I just wanted to ask the young, not some of you guys, what do Indonesian young people listen to? What is like the music? That
like right now, Indonesia, I think we mostly listen to pop music. Because
does it mean American music or
we listen to some American music, but like mostly like Indonesia, like some artists, they just they usually play pop music. Mostly, but we also hear hip hop or like reggae.
Uh huh. Yeah. I want to find some Indonesian reggae.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. If you have some, let me know.
I have a friend. He was my friend in high school. He started his own band, reggae band, and he's kind of famous right now in Indonesia.
I actually think that I know. I actually play one artist. I do a reggae show at 6 o'clock here on the station, and there's this one artist I play from Indonesia. I cannot. Ooh. What's his name?
Oh, it's a new band, though.
Yeah, it's a fairly... Anyway, yeah. I play. He's like a Rasta, and Rastafarian.
It's like
dreadlocks.
Stephen Gokun or something, I don't know, I'm forgetting.
Yeah, anyway, cool. And you, do you?
I think it depends on region. If you live in the city, you will listen to Western music a lot. But if you live in the village, maybe they will listen to traditional music or dangdut.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
It's
influenced by Indian.
Yeah.
Our TV in Indonesia plays a lot of Indian movies.
Like Bollywood.
Bollywood.
Yeah. But it's not my favorite music.
No. Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite music?
I like pop and hip hop.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it is time for us to get out of here. It was mostly interesting. I found out so much about Indonesia. I had no idea. Sultan is one of those things that will stick in my head, I know. Maybe we have to come back and do a show again and, whatever focus you want to have, it's okay with me. Anyways, thank you so much for all of you for coming.
Thank you.
Great. So we have to do it again, yes?
Yes, we will.
And go out with some music.